The Mountaintop Podcast show notes can be found at www.mountaintoppodcast.com, where you can also subscribe to the newsletter and get a 25-minute call with me for free. Also, you're invited to join the Mountaintop Summit Facebook group. Look forward to seeing you there.
Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X&Y Communications headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Hey, all right, guys, this is Scott McKay once again with another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. Glad you guys are with me today. As always, I have another excellent guest for you. And I'll tell you what, I've known this cat for about 8 years, and we've been talking about having this podcast for ages, but he's always gallivanting around Germany doing his thing or driving his jacked up 454 equipped Chevy Suburban around the Arizona desert or something. So he and I haven't been able to do this show yet, but now is the time. This is the place. And Orlando Owen, you are the man. Welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah, you and I shared the stage at some kind of summit about 8 years ago over in Europe and made friends immediately. I actually still have a picture of you and I.
Yes.
In a museum where you're right. Standing in front of Edvard Munch's The Scream.
Yes.
Imitating that iconic pose. And I love that picture. And what I love most about it is what happened afterwards, where the lady who was like the security guard actually screamed at us
for
taking a picture of the scream, which is why I don't have the reciprocal pose.
Oh, right. That's right. I forgot that we could you had a picture with that. That's right.
I'm going to go ahead and post that picture up on the website under the show notes so these guys can see that I'm not just blowing smoke. This actually did happen. And you did a wonderful job impersonating that painting, I might add.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like that. Yeah. But yeah.
Every day I feel like that, actually. At least once. But then again, I still have youngins in the house. What can I say?
Oh, sure. Yeah, exactly. That'll do it to you.
Now, yeah. Orlando, these guys are going to love you if they don't know you already. You're the head of an operation called Remasculation, which is near and dear to my heart. You have a similar goal there that we do here at X&Y Communications, which is helping men reclaim their masculinity in a way that isn't toxic, in a way that's virtuous as it should be. You're all about getting better with women, enjoying a life full of wonderful women. And sure. Tell us a little bit more about what you've been up to lately.
Well, we just did an event in Munich, Germany about 2 months ago called Feel Different. And I stole that from Steve Jobs. Obviously, it's Think Different, but we did a trademark it. And we had almost 1,000 people there. We could have sold 2,500 tickets if this would have had a big enough venue. But it was all about, you know, self-esteem, primarily from a male perspective. And there's a very different type of self-esteem when you're a man than if you're a woman. Of course, in this gender neutral world, it's people think, oh, there's not even a difference at all, not even physically. I beg to differ. And we had some women there, and they were all very, very impressed with what happened to the guys when they actually embraced that, when they really kind of tap into that masculine power. It's all about taking your power back, and people think, well, you know, what is power? How do I get power? And I think the short answer is take responsibility. And people think, well, responsibility is really a burden. Why should I do that? I just want it all. I want it now. And I say to that, look, you know, responsibility is actually not a burden. It's not guilt. It's not guilt tripping you. It's not an added burden in your life. It's actually a way to say, look, you know, I'm not a victim. My life is not given to chance. If I take responsibility, then I'm actually reclaiming control over my life. And it's actually probably the single most important key to taking your power back.
Hence the overarching topic of today's show, which is indeed responsibility. I already love what you're saying about this, and I kind of just feel compelled to let you continue riffing, Orlando, because you're already pretty much hitting it with a big heavy hammer here. You're talking about responsibility pretty much being the linchpin to taking your power back as a man.
Yes.
So the fact that so many men aren't feeling very powerful today could very well be, in your estimation, because we're abdicating responsibility as men, as the kings of our life.
Absolutely. And I mean, it contains the word responsibility, if you want to get into the, you know, taking, picking words apart. When we think our life is chance, or when we think things just happen to me. I don't know why they happen to me. I have no idea. You're really not responsible. You don't take that responsibility. Then you really are saying, look, you know, these things just happen out of happenstance. And, you know, I'm a victim here. And there is no greater and quicker way to give away your power than to become a victim, or what I call learned helplessness. And, you know, when I was a young man, when I was probably as a teenager, even when I entered college, I always wanted my parents to take care of me. And I was probably a very entitled little brat. And, you know, my parents did that for a while. I could never even get to first or second base, not in life and not with women. And when they finally did, the best thing they ever did to me with my parents was what they call tough love, when they cut me off financially. For about a month, I was in panic mode. I looked like, you know, Monk the Scream. And yes. I said, oh, okay, well, I guess what I really need to do is I need to get like, you know, a student job here. I need to kind of make my own money. I need to find ways of legally making money on the side, because otherwise I'm not going to last for 4 years of college. And back at the time, you know, a semester cost $3,500, including room and board. So it wasn't a very expensive school by today's standard. I think the whole college education was very inexpensive. And I probably supplemented my income after the initial phase of being cut off and not having enough money to even go out and even get a McDonald's hamburger. I found ways very quickly to make money legally, responsibly. And all of a sudden I was one of the wealthiest kids on campus, not because my parents made that so, but because I became very enterprising. And there's a thing, I just heard that recently, and I haven't really been able to completely do all the research and the math on it, but somebody was talking about how apparently, things or plants or whatever it is in zero gravity don't grow very well. Or for instance, if you have, plants that aren't exposed to wind in a greenhouse, they become very lanky and very skinny, and they don't build a big foundation or a big trunk, you know, a tree trunk. They're all branches and no base. And if we grow in the face of adversity, and if we're not challenged in some way, if we think, oh, the world owes us, or we're entitled, or we get it all, you know, sugar blown up, or you know what, by our parents or by society, or the whole discussion about the, you know, basic, unconditional basic income, whatever it's called. I cringe when I hear that. And of course, when I was in my late teens or early 20s, I would have probably welcomed that with open arms. I said, yes, 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 give me. As long as my parents were doing that, or anyone else I've seen, all my peers of the age group of that, they all pretty much faltered. They became lazy, they became entitled, and they never really got anywhere. And women would definitely notice. And women were, yeah, you know, look at your hands, dude. Your hands look like you've never worked a day in your life. And I said, I'm working out. I said, no, that doesn't count. And you have a couple of calluses, but you don't look like you've actually worked a day in your life, which was totally true. And then I said, look, you know, I need to get a physical job. I need to do some gardening. I need to do chop woods or whatever, do masculine things. And really challenge myself, always find hard things. Eventually, I joined the military through RTC. I did all these things. And all of a sudden, I had more girls kind of taking an interest in me than I could have ever even done anything with. And I think the one thing, it was a girl right in my freshman year in the first semester that said, look, you know, you don't do your own socks. You know, you're looking for a sugar mommy. You're a wuss boy. and I knew instinctively that she was right, and she actually left me for a guy that was, you know, like about as smart as a fence post. But that guy was actually, you know, he was a contractor, he was a landscaper, he did all that kind of stuff. And I was like, what's she seeing him? And then I asked this friend of mine, this friend girl, and she said, because that guy's self-sufficient. That's really what it's about. You need to take responsibility for your life. You need to make something out of it. And it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't have to be the end all be all. It just has to be some kind of thing that challenges you, that pays you money so you can not rely on your parents. You're not trying to get a free ride. We grow in the face of adversity. And if we don't have it, you know, it may not be fun to get that initially if you've never done it. Right now, I wouldn't – I mean, if I don't get constantly challenged by life – or by my you know, profession or what we do in business or re-masculation, I don't grow. I become complacent. If it's just 3 months of that, I'm already feeling, geez, man, this is getting boring. What's wrong? Okay, what is the problem here? No, it's too easy. I'm coasting on my product sales. I don't want to do that. I need to do something new. If I don't constantly grow, if I don't constantly challenge myself, take responsibility, look at what it does to, you know, thousands and thousands of guys that come to us. If I don't constantly challenge myself and them, I said, I can't just challenge the guys that come to me. I need to constantly challenge myself. Otherwise, I become stagnant. I can't even listen to my own stuff. I said, well, geez, man, I said the same thing 3 months ago. I can't even listen to this anymore. It's getting boring. I need to have new stuff.
Yeah, man. It's like the ultimate indictment to oneself in this business. You or I, or I'm sure a lot of other guys, if they wake up and smell the coffee, is that if you're listening to your own content that you were excited mm-hmm. to give guys about being a man and taking responsibility, and it speaks to you because you're not freaking doing it yourself, it's time to get off your ass and wake the hell up. And I have to raise my hand. You know, at least some days I feel like that for sure. And none of us are perfect, of course. I don't want to beat anybody over the head. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is, man, I can fully remember, as you were talking, my parents harping on responsibility, responsibility, mm-hmm. responsibility. When I was a kid, I mean, you know, I'm a 9-10-year-old kid. And nowadays, I'm the father of a 10-year-old son. And what do? I harp on responsibility, responsibility. You know, we're just freaking irresponsible when we're little kids. You know, we take a dump and don't flush the toilet. And we've gone grocery shopping. There's a bunch of groceries in the car. And the kid just jumps in the house and goes and tries to find the Xbox. It's like, hey, kid, you know, grab a bag. No personal responsibility whatsoever until parents raise children up like that. And somewhere along the way, I'm convinced more than ever, especially now having listened to you talk so eloquently on this subject, Orlando, that I'm not so sure parents even care to teach their kids responsibility anymore. And I'll tell you what.
Yep.
I'm thinking, you know, as you were talking about the need to get a job and be a man and be physical and a woman leaving you because you weren't, I'm picturing, you know, Charlie Bronson in Magnificent Seven, literally chopping wood mm-hmm. as Steve McQueen's trying to recruit him to the posse they're putting together. Cause you know, that's an image of masculinity and yeah, okay, this guy is a badass. Let's get him on board. Man, I think guys in general should go watch a lot of old Western movies, but Magnificent Seven would be a probably good one to start with for guys yeah. who are wondering what it means to be a man nowadays and to have some responsibility. Cause that's what that whole freaking movie's about.
Right.
And nowadays, look at what's going on. I'm not going to get very political on this show.
Right.
I don't care what side of the political fence you are on. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're left-leaning or right-leaning. But if you get on Twitter or you get on Facebook and you start traipsing around on that side of the tracks, you're going to really, hopefully, I should add, get disgusted by how bored people are with their lives mm-hmm. and how little they have to complain about and how they just want to blame everybody for everything. Without even knowing the facts, without even lifting a finger to do the research on what the truth means, people just want to say, oh, well, I was told this person's a total moron. So you know what? You're a moron, or perhaps even evil, or perhaps we should even like get rid of you and wipe you from the face of the earth if you believe the way they do. Mm. People in the West in general have not had legitimate strife. They have not had legitimate problems compared to what people in other parts of the world and what people in other parts of history have gone through. Yep. Just yesterday, my team is the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA. And the coach is known for being a little bit surly, Greg Popovich, and giving his views on how he thinks the world revolves, much to the chagrin of some and to the applause of others. And he was asked yesterday to comment on the struggles of his previous year in basketball, you know, with some of the things happening with the team that culminated, of course, in the trade of Kawhi Leonard to the Toronto Raptors. Mm. And he just looked at them and said, struggle? I mean, we're playing a little kid's game here, struggling here. There are billions of people in this world who are legitimately struggling with stuff every day.
Yeah.
And you're talking to a guy who graduated from the Air Force Academy, a guy who's a military man, and a guy who knows what it means to have responsibility. And I, frankly, thought his response was a little over the top. I mean, the guy's just trying to do his job on the beat as a sports reporter. I mean, there were some things that, relatively speaking, you know, to being in a concentration camp or whatever would, you know, be some struggles in that sport. Plus, the guy lost his wife. You know, she died a few months ago. I mean, that may have been part of the discussion, too. But truth be told, the things we argue about on Twitter, the things we want to banish people out of the country or maybe even hang them from a tree over in this country are not life and death things.
Yeah.
You know, to liken what's happening in a press conference to Pearl Harbor or Auschwitz.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just blatantly demonstrates we have no effing idea what it means, A, to struggle, and B, to take responsibility, come together, and fight for something that matters.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm talking about responsibility in those terms because you were wise enough to take apart the etymology of that word, and it's the ability to respond. Well, there has to be a cause worth responding to. And when there isn't, what do we as people do? In our heart of hearts, we know there's a hole there. We know there's a void there. And we go looking for something in a morally relative world, by the way. There's not necessarily a groundedness there. There's not a foundational core belief system to point us in that direction. So unlike your weak trees in the greenhouse, we're weak trees outside the greenhouse, blowing around in the wind, not knowing which direction to take until one's handed to us. Therefore, we become very easily propagandized and sworn to a belief that we're not even sure where it came from.
Yes.
And then we go looking for people to fight and looking for people to disagree with. All, and here it is, okay, from the safety of our own computer where there really is no struggle to begin with. All the people we're fighting, all the people we're arguing with, we're never going to see those people in real life. They're all bits and bytes or ones and zeros on the other end of a computer screen. We're just bored and we have nothing to be responsible over that makes any sense. And so we're lazily looking to social media to give us something that feels remotely like purpose. And I think it's really weak and I don't think it's responsible at all. How are we going to change the world, especially as men? What are we going to do that gives us real purpose? Something that's not the hollow men, as T.S. Eliot talks about. And if you're unfamiliar with that poem, that's the infamous poem that ends, "This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper." I think a lot of guys are whimpering their lives away because they have nothing to be responsible over because, like you said, and I know this is one of your soapboxes, so I'm revving you up here, we're hollow men. And that makes us forgotten men in the long run, like you like to talk about.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's also just the hollowness, the emptiness, the lack of purpose. One of my favorite, whether you like the president back then or not, JFK, one of the greatest quotations that I can think of that he ever said, my favorite quotation he ever said was, "Don't ask what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." And one of my favorite books that I give people that are slightly depressed or that have, you know, depression at an early age for no apparent reason other than they just don't know who they are, what they want to do in life, is Dale Carnegie's book, How to Stop Worrying and How to Start Living. And my favorite chapter in that book is where he's talking about, look, you know, find something of service. I'm not talking about Mother Teresa here. You don't have to be like, oh, it's all selfless and I want to change the world. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, look, if you have too much time in your hands by not doing anything, if you're not forced to live, make a living, if you don't really know what you stand for, if you have nothing that gives you a sense of purpose, not only will women notice that and probably kind of not really think much of you. And if even if you're just a tree hugger and you just want to do that and you just want to change the world on that level, fine, but it's still a purpose. Whereas if you have so much time on your hand that you just become so self-absorbed and it's, you know, the generation selfie, I call this current Gen Y or whatever they call it, Generation Y. If you really think about this, if you really just do some kind of community service, anything, just anything that'll keep you busy, even if you're just helping, you know, old lady over the street, or you just keep the old lady or the old man that's living by himself or herself, maybe an hour a week or a half hour a week, drink a cup of tea with him, drink a cup of coffee with him and keep him some company and say, look, you know, can I help you buy some groceries for you? Whatever it is, like I used to do for my great grandma. That will already take the focus. Not only will you be doing a good thing, but it'll actually take the focus off your own problems. And then when you're living for something like that, that's when the reward is intrinsic and you won't have as much time to think about this stuff. I was actually about 15 years ago, I was actually a fairly lazy millionaire. I lived in Las Vegas. I had way too much time on my hand. Yes, it wasn't my parents taking care of me or the system. It was myself who had accumulated quite a bit of wealth that I thought at the time I would have never had to work a day in my life again ever. I mean, I had $2 million in assets. I could live off the interest just fine. The best thing that ever happened to me was when I lost all that money. And afterwards, I had a real wake-up call, and it forced me to completely re-examine my life. I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now if that hadn't happened. And those things, that kind of adversity, can not only empower you in that way, it can actually be the wake-up call, the swift kick in the pants that you may need to open up a whole new sense of opportunity. And I really, really think about what you can do to make somebody else's life better, what you can contribute to society. And it doesn't have to be a lofty purpose or kind of Mother Teresa, like I said, just anything that'll take the focus away from you and think about how you can make a contribution rather than fighting everyone, everything on an ideological basis or getting the little dopamine high like the Facebook guy, not Zuckerberg, the other guy was saying. He said, look, you know, we knew we were doing this. People just live for that tiny little bit of dopamine high from getting a like or getting an approval. If that's all you do, the social media world or living in your mom's basement playing video games, that is not reality. And I mean, I've seen 40-year-old virgins that will stay virgins. The oldest virgin I've ever met is 52 years old. And that's pretty sad. And that guy still lives in his mom's basement and plays video games. And he's wondering why he can't get late.
I think I know that guy, too.
You met him? Yeah. A very universal character.
Let me tell you, having an easy life in the end becomes very hard.
Yes.
Because you don't feel like you've done anything with your life. You don't have any purpose. It's a life half lived.
Yes.
It's been said that a life spent worrying is a life half lived. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the book by Dale Carnegie, which of course is a classic. He's best known for How to Win Friends and Influence People, of course. But his book, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living, that is another kernel of universal truth there on how to live a great life. But I think a lot of times that inaction, that safety, that mm-hmm. crawling inside your shell and not ever coming out mm-hmm. is because of worry. We worry what's out there. We're fearing what's out
yes.
there. And that fear keeps us from being a man. It keeps us from being responsible, because to be responsible, again, you have the ability to respond. Respond is action, not inaction.
Mm-hmm.
So there we are, living in our parents' basement till we're 35. We're 52-year-old virgins. We don't ever have a career.
Mm-hmm.
We may be wards of the state for our whole life. I read just within the last couple of days a post from someone ranting about how the word entitlement is in and of itself a microaggression. You know, to make the entitled feel bad for getting what – I mean, you know, you got to be kidding. This is meta-level helplessness we're talking about here. Here's a hint, guys. If you're worried about the semantics by which your entitlements are being granted to you and you're trying to measure how much of an aggression it is and how offended you should be in return, guess what? You're not being responsible.
Yep.
Go ahead. Admit it. You're not being responsible. Those who are easily offended suck, and we talk about that a lot around here. Being offended is the byproduct of looking for something to be excited about when there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
That's really meaningful to get excited about.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be offended by something, I want to be offended hard. I want it to injure me. I don't want it to be a microaggression. I can't imagine not feeling ashamed of having been so deeply offended by something called a microaggression. If I'm a man, a micro anything better not steamroll me.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the microaggression. Actually, a friend of mine in Las Vegas, he said, well, by mathematical definition, that means 1 million microaggressions equal one actual aggression.
Yes, because a micro is a 1 millionth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think a nano aggression would probably affect some of these people to the point of just screaming and yelling and jumping up and down. But again, this is what happens when we don't have any real struggles. There's nothing to feel like I have to be responsible for. I mean, this isn't World War II where you're getting hit on both sides by the Axis and by the Japanese Empire, and your entire freedom really is at stake here. Mm-hmm. And you have women building the planes so the men can go out and fight. You know, that is the kind of aggression that should offend us enough to get off our asses and do something. If we're offended because of a TV commercial or because someone misspoke who's on the opposing side in politics or something like that, we need a bigger purpose. We need something else to do. We need anything to do. And I think a lot of guys have coddled themselves, like I said in a previous show, quoting someone else, they have pampered themselves into mediocrity to such a point where they really don't have any purpose. They don't even realize they don't have any purpose anymore. Isn't this what everybody else is doing, sitting around waiting for a microaggression to knee-jerk to in the way that we've been told we ought to knee-jerk to it? We've been given the script of what to say when we're offended. Yeah. And everybody else is offended. This must be the way it should be. Man, if we're worried about some other country infiltrating us, they're not going to do it at the ballot box. They're going to do it by infiltrating our very souls. I remember about 15 years ago, when my oldest daughter was about 3, she would watch this show called Caillou on public broadcasting. And it was about a little boy being raised by his parents, and his parents spoiled him rotten, and all he ever did was cry, kick, complain, and moan. And his parents would go, "Now, Caillou, it's not really all that bad." And then the little boy would moan and complain like he was freaking Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka. "But Daddy, I want it now." You know, I almost do too good of an imitation, don't I? Watched too much Caillou when I was younger. And I remember banishing that show from my TV, and I was raising a daughter. You know, when I finally had watched the show and figured out how terrible it was, I mean, once I picked up my jaw off the floor and saw the credits at the end, I realized it had been produced in Canada. A Canadian production team was responsible for the show. And I looked over at my wife at the time, who of course is now my ex-wife, and I looked at her with a straight face. And I said, you know, about 20 years from now, the Canadians are going to come here and conquer us. And this will have been their plot to basically emasculate and feminize and wimpify all our boys and make it happen. And I'm sitting here in front of the mic talking to you right now, Orlando, and realizing that was 18 years ago. We're almost there. I mean, unfortunately, I think the Canadians watch too much of their own show, too. But, you know, this is a battle for the very soul of men and women in this country. Do we even know how to be responsible anymore? If something did come that was a truly baleful, ominous threat on this entire society, could we unite? Could we get up from our pettiness, walk away from the stupidity that you see on social media every day, and be responsible enough as a country to unite and fight whatever we needed to fight? Because someone would have to take responsibility. And I don't know who that would be, because I'm not sure how many of us there are left. And I think that's a sad state of affairs. So this conversation on responsibility is mission critical.
Yes. Yeah, it's almost like the thing that Ronald Reagan was saying back then, how quickly we would overcome all our differences if we were facing an alien threat. And such an alien threat doesn't have to come from outer space, or it could be anything. I remember going, I moved to Miami in 1992, and the first thing I experienced just a few days into my stay in Miami Beach was actually Hurricane Andrew. And you have all kinds of warring factions, but like people that are kind of at odds with each other. You have, you know, the people in Homestead, you have the rednecks there, you have the Cubans, you have this and that. And these people usually don't get along too well. I mean, when that hurricane, which was arguably one of the strongest hurricanes in U.S. history, when that thing happened, you should have seen people come together and completely. I mean, it's almost a cliche, but I mean, nobody cared if you were Jewish, black, white, Hispanic, or whatever. People all pulled together. They were helping each other, and it was to not stress the old cliche of like community building and all that. I have never seen actual community building in any practical sense like I saw it in the aftermath of that. Now you take that like in magnitude or two higher, such as a war, which is infinitely even worse, you will definitely see people come together. And you know, it's almost like I forget who said that, but it says, look, you know, we've been the longest period of peace in possibly human history. That's 73 years if I'm doing the math right here. We haven't had any adversity. We haven't had a real threat or even anything threatening. We haven't had a war on U.S. soil, thank God. And I'm all for that. But it's almost like the generations alter. I mean, some of the most successful people I've ever seen came from nothing. They were either living in the trailer or in the ghetto, or they came from immigrants that were dirt poor. And I have seen more entitled children of very wealthy people, including my dad, was quite wealthy. I mean, he was not by today's standard, but in the 50s, 60s, he was actually, a millionaire. And as long as he gave me money, I just could not make money. And I really, really was very depressed and very uncertain about myself. I think every time I was either cut off or I lost money or anything tragic kind of happened in my life, all of a sudden I came into my responsibility and felt good. And I've seen this so many times when people just don't have any adversity, any real challenges, they aren't happy. I have never seen anyone real happy that was given money or anything like that, welfare, anything. I've just never seen it. And it will not give you a sense of self-esteem. You cannot possibly have self-esteem if you don't have to fend for yourself.
100%. And I'll tell you what, as you were talking, I'm reminded of what happened last year in Houston and with Hurricane Irma. You know, those were sizable tragedies and people did come together. It didn't matter the color of your skin. It didn't matter where you stood on gender equality or how many genders existed or anything like that. Nobody cared who you voted for. We were rescuing
you. Right.
And people came together. I just think it's really sad and unfortunate that it takes a tragedy to get people to snap out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't. And that, I think, is the central message of this entire podcast. Gentlemen, you're a man. You already know it increases your self-esteem to be responsible. It makes you a happier man to be responsible. It makes you more attractive to women. It makes you more of what I call a big four man to have that kind of character, because that's what we're talking about here. If you're responsible, it's part of doing the right thing and being a man of character.
Character, yes.
Don't wait for something to beat that out of you. Don't make it a necessity. Make responsibility a choice, not an obligation. Take control. And you know what? Once you have control over your decision to be responsible, here it is. Wait for it. You get your power back. It comes full circle. There you go. Orlando, I want to send these guys to your website. I've set up a special URL so they can get to Remasculation, which is your wonderful blog full of content. And guys, go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/Orlando, O-R-L-A-N-D-O, and learn more about Orlando Owen, my friend, all-around good guy, Orlando Owen, and all of his wonderful exhortations to be a great man and to take responsibility. You're going to find him uplifting. You're going to like his style. He's a good guy, and he's the real deal, and he walks the talk. Orlando, thank you so much for joining today. It's been way too long since we talked, and as it always has been, it's been a pleasure.
Yes, thank you very much, Scott. It's been really, really great to talk to you and talk to a man of like mind and like experience. And if I may say one thing, you just actually kind of opened this up for me. The whole thing, you're almost inviting disaster by not taking responsibility. I've seen it in my own life when I didn't do that when I was a millionaire. I've seen it. It's almost like we as a society may be headed unconsciously, or however you want to explain the metaphysics behind it, law of attraction, whatever it is. I've seen it time and again when people were skirting responsibility, didn't do that, and just kind of like lived their lives in lack of responsibility. Disaster was almost always, maybe not total disaster, but at least enough of a challenge to get off your butt, go out there and completely change the direction of your life. And no one I've ever seen that it happened to later said, oh, that was a horrible thing. Everybody else said, including myself, best thing that ever happened to me. Don't invite it by inaction or by skirting responsibility.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. And not only are we inviting it, we're literally waiting for it.
Yes.
Just like we just talked about. That's really a sobering thought, isn't it? But a very, very good one to process. Guys, get after this. Go out and be a responsible man. The women are waiting. And guys, if you haven't yet heard about what I call the Focus Program, let me let you in on that. For years and years, I've been coaching guys one-on-one. It's my passion. It's what I do best. Helping you guys become better men, becoming the men you were supposed to be, and attract the kind of women you want into your life, ultimately having the woman of your dreams in your life. The gold standard of my coaching programs has always been the 10 plus program, where we plan a complete path for you, complete plan of action to take you from point A to point B, where you are right now to where you want to be. Have 10 sessions over a period of time that you decide and give you the chance to call me anytime you want, 24/7, 365, about whatever comes up. Well, a lot of you guys have said, you know, I don't need the planning process. My problems are a lot like what other guys' problems are. My goals are a lot like what other guys' goals are. I know what I need to get taken care of. I know what I need to get handled. I want to hit the ground running, know where we're headed, be accountable to have it happen during a certain period of time, and get there by that deadline and see the results I want. Well, that's what the Focus program is all about. It's more cost-effective than the 10-plus program because it's leaner and meaner. And if you'd like to learn more about that, go ahead to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/focus, F-O-C-U-S, and take a look at what's involved there. I think you'll like the different topics that are covered. Or you can go ahead, as always, and write me at scott@deservewhatyouwant.com. That's scot@deservewhatyouwant.com. And let me know what's on your mind. Let me know you want the details and give me a way to contact you. Until I talk to you again next time on the next episode, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications. Be good out there.
Mountaintop Podcast is copyright 2016 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.